Well, I mean, if Jesus is using this principle, and I use this hermeneutic throughout the book, if Jesus is using a principle, Jesus is using an approach, a methodology, then perhaps it's okay for us to use it as well.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, you are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdes.
So welcome to the Leadersmith podcast. I'm Darren Gurdes, and with me is Mike Zigarelli. Now, Mike Zigarelli literally wrote the book on influence. It's Influencing Like Jesus, and I use this in my Power and Influence class. And Mike, I'm so happy that you could be with us. Thank you for coming on this podcast.
Thanks for inviting me. Great to be here.
So here's what I want to know. Why'd you write the book? I mean, just give me a broad overview of why it's important that we understand what you put into this book.
Why'd I write the book? Well, probably the same reasons that I write any book. I write books on topics that where I don't want to put this. It's going to sound a little paradoxical, but I write about things that I don't know, if that makes sense. I'm a researcher. That's sort of the rationale behind this book is I wanted to know the answer to the question, how could I be a better influencer? How could I persuade more effectively? And how could I learn from the world's greatest persuader, the world's greatest influencer, Jesus Christ? So that was kind of the genesis of it.
Okay. So can you give me a broad overview of what's in the book or what students who are reading it or people who would just pick it up on a shelf would be expecting to see?
Yeah. So if you start with the question of, you know, how can I be more persuasive? How can I be a better agent of change? You know, how can I be salt and light wherever it is that I'm going? There are a number of different principles out there, some of them from social science, psychology, economics, philosophy, etc. Some of them are theologically based. And what I found in looking at the life and ministry of Jesus Christ is that there are at least 15 principles of influence that we can glean there. There are probably more, but I picked out these 15 and organized them into to five groups of three. So the first three principles are all things that we can do before we ever say a word to try to influence somebody. You know, rather than just going charging in there with our reasons and with our to make our case, perhaps we need to step back and talk to God about it, maybe be the right kind of person, have the right kind of disposition toward the other individual, understand them, know our audience better. Those kinds of principles where they're kind of pre-influence principles. Before I say a word, I'm going to go and kind of do my own homework and prepare properly, maybe even put an influence plan together, a strategy together, rather than just kind of doing this in a shoot from the hip type of format. So I mean, that's an example of one group of three principles there. Another deals with building relationship with the individual and how that can culminate in greater influence. There's a great Harvard Business Review article out there called Connect, Then Lead. It's from a few years ago now, but as far as like, how can we lead better? Well, maybe one of the first steps is to connect with them. Well, we see the same sort of thing in the ministry of Jesus. We see the same sort of thing in scripture. And so one section of the book expounds on that, how we build relationship with people as a platform for greater influence. There are reframing principles in here. There are principles of logic and evidence giving in here. There are principles in here on how to put pressure on the other person in an appropriate, faith-based manner, and if indeed that is something necessary in order to move them along. So what I found here was just a treasure trove of ideas, principles, examples from Jesus himself on how we can be better ambassadors.
Yeah, so I was hooked with the story of Tippy. That got me right away, and then the dentist story I really, really liked. What was your favorite section of this as you were going through it? Obviously some sing more to you than others.
Favorite section. Excuse me. It's sort of like asking me who's my favorite kid of the four kids that I have. I'm not really sure, but I really learned quite a bit in my research of Jesus storytelling. how Jesus, and we all know this, one of his primary pathways to influence was to go around the countryside and tell parables and connect with people that way. And, you know, they don't even know that they're necessarily going to be influenced. They're going to be affected by this. They're just hanging out, listening to a story from the local rabbi. But before you know it, some truth is upon them that they have to deal with. And it's something that's memorable to them. It's something they can pass along to other people. It's a really powerful way, in an indirect way, in sort of subtle way, to plant some new ideas into people's heads without them ever knowing that you're really trying to influence them in some way. And that's especially important today, I think, because so many people are on guard about being sold, whether it's ideas or some product or whatever. Everybody's got their hand out. Everybody's trying to sell us something. But you come along rather than with a sort of a set of bullet points, or, you know, some sort of airtight case, you come along telling a story as Jesus did. And now they have something that that kind of anchors it for them. And at the same time, there's some sort of inescapable truth in that story that they need to maybe deal with for themselves. So I think of all the principles in there, that's one that, I mean, kind of familiar with it, use it in class all the time, use it in my writing all the time, but came through in a very powerful way.
Yeah, you preempted my next question, which was, why is story so powerful? Which, apparently that's a big one that it rose to the top for both you and I as we were thinking about this. So the trickiest part when I'm teaching this in class is to discuss limiting availability. So can you explain that and talk about it? Because students see that as manipulation until you unpack it. But even then, they're still a little not sure. So
Well, limit the availability is one of the last of the 15 principles in this book. And it's basically like, you know, act now. One day sale, limited time offer. You know, it's good until you walk out that door. Otherwise, you know, we're going to have to renegotiate the price. That, that kind of idea behind how to get somebody to say yes when they might be predisposed to say no, which does sound manipulative. It is putting pressure on them. And it can, in fact, like all of these principles, it can be used in a way that is inappropriate, right? So, and these are tools, these influence principles, they're just tools. They're value neutral tools that we can use for good or for evil. You know, it's like, and I think I use this example somewhere in the book, it's like a hammer or a screwdriver or a saw, you know, just a value neutral tool. And I can take that hammer and build a deck, or I can take that hammer and break all the windows in my house. It's not the hammer's fault, right? It's my fault. How it's used brings it value, either good or bad. So point is, with this limited availability principle, it's not the principle that's the problem. It's in fact how we might use it, how we might use it in a manipulative way. So when Jesus says you don't know the time, you don't know the hour, you don't know the day, you know, you basically have a limited time offer here to follow me, and you know, don't wait because I might be coming back soon, and you have a decision to make. Well, I mean, if Jesus is using this principle, and I use this hermeneutic throughout the book, if Jesus is using a principle, Jesus is using an approach, methodology, then perhaps it's okay for us to use it as well, right? That really is a primary filter for us knowing what's appropriate, what's not appropriate in our behaviors. So point is that every one of these principles can be used for good or for evil. It's, you know, what's our motivation, what's our heart behind it.
Yeah, that's a great nutshell. If Jesus is using it, this is an indication that we should be able to use that same kind of principle. And that would summarize or encapsulate everything that you've been trying to say. Okay, so you have a revised edition of this book. Why a revised edition?
Well, that came out in 2007. It's now 2020. So it's 12, 13 years since I published it, and probably 14 years since I actually wrote it. And you know, with all my books, after a while, I look at them and say, man, that could be said better. These examples need to be updated. I think I know a whole lot more than I did back then. Some of it, you know, I'm updating one right now that's 20 years old. Some of it I look back and it's just cringeworthy. Oh my goodness, I wish I could unpublish that. I didn't see too much of that influencing like Jesus, but really, I'd like to give my readers the best of what I know now. And so I updated it in a way that I think is maybe a little more helpful. The language, more contemporary examples, tighter language, that sort of thing. Hopefully it's more readable and more practical for people.
Yeah. What lessons are more relevant now than they were 12 years ago?
There's this sort of ongoing inexorable move toward relativism and postmodernism. People are less likely to buy into absolute truth. Mm-hmm. Right? People are less likely to buy into, whether it's Christianity or any other claim to absolute truth for all people in all places of all times, pretty skeptical about that. And I think more so with every passing decade. Some of the principles in here, like letting people experience things for themselves. Mm-hmm. That's something that might be more important now than ever, because again, people are on their guard about being sold, and they're Christianity is caricatured and kind of viewed in a way that that it might be a little bit unfair. And so, rather than coming at things very directly, maybe we need to let them experience for themselves the kind of the truth of some sort of principle, some sort of idea, some sort of proposal that we might have. And as they do, then they basically convince themselves. Right? We're never more convinced of something than when we convince ourselves, when we experience it for ourselves. You know, might be a test drive. It might be trying a new product. It might be
the Socratic method, right? It might be the Socratic method when you convince yourself.
If you can get them there. Yeah, I'm sorry. If you can get them there through the Socratic method, asking questions rather than giving answers, these are especially useful principles for people who are skeptical or doubtful of what you're saying, or might be inclined to disagree with you. So I think some of the principles in the book that are along those lines are perhaps more important now than they were a decade ago.
Okay. Well, hey, thank you for taking the time to talk with me about this, give this overview, paint the picture of what's in the book. I always close with a quotation for contemplation, and then I'll give you the last word, okay? So the quotation for contemplation today is from John Maxwell, talking about influence. He said, "True leadership cannot be awarded, appointed, or assigned. It comes only from influence, and that can't be mandated. It must be earned." And he goes on to say, I found that as a quote, but his next line's even better. "The only thing a title can buy is a little time, either to increase your level of influence with others or to undermine it." And I think that's just so appropriate to everything that you were talking about. You just because you're the boss doesn't mean anything. You now have to earn that influence. And everything that you're talking about in here is about how to earn that influence. And I thank you for coming on. Last word.
Yeah. And just because you're the coach doesn't mean that they're going to follow. Just because you're the parent doesn't mean that they're going to say yes and comply. Just because you're the teacher doesn't mean that they're going to do their homework. And so we need to be a little more shrewd about it. But beyond just being practical, beyond the pragmatics of all of this, this is an opportunity that God gives to us to speak into people's lives, to be salt and light, to be ambassadors of Christ, to move forward the Great Commission and the Cultural Commission and this domestic commission that we have at home. Well, maybe Jesus teaches us not just what to do, but how to do it. And that's what I was really after in this book. How is it that we can influence authentically? How is it that we can influence in a way that's faithful? How is it that we can influence like Jesus?
You did it masterfully in the book, as you did in Managing by Proverbs and other books that you wrote. If you want to find Mike Zigarelli, look up Christianity9to5.org, and you can see his books and other material, articles he's written. And Mike, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Darren, for having me.
I appreciate it.